Hello and welcome. Thank you for listening to a podcast from Topics Norsvin. In our podcast, we discuss various topics related to swine genetics, our view of the industry, and market developments. This podcast offers information in a lighthearted way, but covers serious topics. So grab a seat at the table of our Topics Norsvin lounge and enjoy listening.
Okay, welcome to this Topics Norsvin podcast. We're going to be talking today about some of the challenges that we're seeing with carcasses getting heavier. My name's Grant Walling. I'm a senior service geneticist, which means that I'm looking after some of our key accounts across Europe and across Asia. And I'm joined from the US with Matt Schulte. I'm sort of wearing my head of the meat group hat today. So Matt's also in my team with the meat group, and our other member that basically supplies technical advice around the world is Caroline Mitchell, that some of you would have probably bumped into before. But today we're looking at heavier carcasses, and I suppose the first question is, you know, sort of how heavy is heavy? Matt, do you want to just explain, you know, if you look at some of the markets you deal with, where are we up to now in terms of carcass weights?
Yeah, there's quite a range that we can see, but especially here in the U.S., we're seeing carcass weights pushing upper from 215 plus pounds, and so that's getting very large for some of the packer sizes that we see here. Typically in the past, it was around 200, 205 pounds, but now jumping that up another 10 pounds plus in many cases. And with current feed prices, some farmers have started to sell earlier, but for the most part, I would say they continue to get larger and larger in terms of that carcass weight.
In fact, just before we came onto this podcast, I had a look to see some key markets, how much the weights have changed over a sort of a 20-year period. So I looked at what the average weight was in a country in 2000, and then I've got the figure for 2021, and it's quite consistent, actually, that the generally carcasses are about 10 kilos heavier now. So if I look, I just randomly picked some out. So I think that the US moved from 87.6 kilos to 97.3 kilos. You'll notice I do metric. Matt does the imperial measurements here, but that's a continental difference here. But, you know, the Netherlands was 87.4 in 2000, now at 99.8. But if I pick someone like, you know, Poland, 84.9, now at 93.6. So it's pretty consistent, is this 10 kilos, which means we're moving about half a kilo a year heavier year on year. Would that fit with your experience, Matt?
Yeah, I would definitely say that continuing to just get larger and larger, half a kilo at a time, it seems to be very consistent here.
And I'm often asked why that's the case. Okay, why is it getting heavier? But I do point out, wearing my genetics hat, that as we improve growth rate, people don't slaughter those animals earlier. They slaughter them at the same point. But if you've grown faster, then you're always going to be putting that... Do you know anyone, Matt, that would actually slaughter the animals earlier? Everybody takes the extra kilos, don't they?
Yeah, for the most part, everybody takes those extra kilos because it's about number of head through the plant typically. And so they're never going to back off on the poundage that they can send through there. So I don't know anyone yet that has pushed back extremely hard on the weight categories. So,
and if we look at, say, the US market that you know very, very well, you know, packers aren't turning around and saying, hang on, these carcasses are getting, you know, are getting too heavy for us. They're quite happy to still pay the prices to bring these animals in, yeah?
Yep. They may dock you slightly for extremely heavy carcasses, but they're more likely to dock you more for extremely light carcasses. So they're actually kind of pushing the other way in a sense where they're okay with that extra poundage, but don't want it being on the lighter end where they could have... some other carcass issues. So,
and when you say dock on very heavy carcasses, what sort of weights are we talking there? Are you talking very extreme there? Yeah.
So, probably pushing 240 pounds. So, convert that over to kilos. But 240 pounds or more for that hot carcass weight, they're definitely Looking at that docking, and then I'd say 235 to 240 is the typically upper range where they dock more heavily.
So yeah, you're talking basically a carcass weight of over 120 kilos at that point, roughly. You know, so it's, you know, in that case there, you are talking extreme. And it, to be honest, we're even seeing in some parts of Europe where they're looking at more ham type products that they don't even mind some carcasses at that, even at that weight, anything up to 130, 140 kilo carcass, because there is still a potential market for a proportion of their slaughter that they can still, you know, still utilize and actually produce quite a nice premium product with some of the ham products.
Yep, yep.
So from a producer point of view, I can see the value in doing this. From a packer point of view, you said that, you know, sort of for an individual head, they've got more kilos or more poundage coming through. What other changes have we seen in the plant to accommodate this? Have we seen any at all, or?
Yeah, so some of the changes that I've at least seen here in the U.S. Market is increasing some of the chilling methods, going from some of the slower, older chilling methods to more rapid methods to accommodate for these larger carcasses. The other thing is just changing some of the processes throughout the fabrication side and of after the carcasses are properly chilled and aged for a day or that 24 hours post-slaughter period, they will have better equipment to accommodate for these larger carcasses that we're seeing and account for those larger values. So what about yourself, Grant?
Well, this is where we struggle a little bit over here. Certainly when I go into, say, Central Europe, but also in some of the European plants, you know, I've got perhaps slaughter plants that were maybe designed 40 years ago. They've made some changes, but as I highlighted earlier, if you're only moving, you know, sort of half a kilo a year, you know, sort of no one builds a sort of a 0.5% increase to their chilling space. So what happens is if you always used to put 200 carcasses in that chiller, you still put 200 carcasses in, but it just so happens that there's a larger sort of body or, you know, sort of a larger weight of animal to chill. And we're starting to see some problems with that. One of the things that we sometimes see is that when we look at those carcasses afterwards, and particularly when they're going to be used in ham production, you cut into the hams and then you can start to see that the meat doesn't hold together as well. We're starting to see some breaking apart. Now, why would that be, Matt? Come on, you're the meat scientist here. I need you to explain, you know, sort of what's going on there. Why would chilling lead to, you know, sort of issues like that?
Yeah, so one of the big things that I think about when we see issues like that is the potential for denaturation of the muscle proteins. And so you've got those proteins, or you've got the whole muscle in that ham, for example, and that's a huge chunk of meat to have to chill down. And so what you're seeing sometimes is when you're not able to chill that fast enough, you have denaturation of the muscle proteins and thus doesn't hold form together throughout the chilling process, because that inner portion is going to be much warmer than the exterior, and hence why we see some of those issues. Not only can see it with the muscle formation, but also can see some of the issues with color and other factors related to the meat quality side of things, where consumers may not want to purchase that ham due to a very light color or some issues like that.
And I must admit, those regions, if you look at the colour of them, it's a lot paler compared to, you know, sort of the other parts of that same muscle. So, you know, that would tie in that, you know, that's what's actually happening there, yeah. And I suppose I've also got some plants that have gone the other way, that they've realised that their chilling capacity is struggling to cope with heavier carcasses. So they have a blast chill system in there. And then they're putting in a very aggressive, rapid blast chill. But at that point, we're then starting to see some issues in terms of drip loss. Now, so what's happening in that situation? Because surely the blast chill should be, you know, sort of improving drip loss, not actually increasing it.
Yeah, so I think one of the big issues we're seeing there is that portions of the muscle and the exterior may actually be getting chilled too rapidly. Once an animal is slaughtered, the pH declines, and once it reaches what we call rigor mortis, or where the muscle does not contract anymore, we will actually go and see that some of those exterior portions are basically frozen before they are able to reach that state of rigor. So once we take those out of the blast chiller, they will continue to go through rigor. But at that point, they may have some structural deformation issues where it will contract very hard or fast and actually push quite a bit of liquid or purge out of the product, and thus causing that issue of more drip loss that we see. And so it's really not a great issue because of the fact that we're losing that poundage of water within the meat products, and that's a huge issue for those packers.
So this chilling of these heavier carcasses clearly is becoming a bit of a challenge for, you know, certainly some of the guys that I'm actually seeing here. Is there any tips that you could give them in terms of, you know, what they can do? Is it something to do with in terms of how they load the chillers or the, you know, perhaps some of the, you know, the chilling rate? What should they be looking at first to maybe try and help the situation?
Yeah, I think the two things is just it's got to be a trial. Obviously, every plant is different in the number of head they can harvest, slaughter in a day, or the number of head that they can push into one cooler. And I think the things that they need to continue to look at and optimize is basically those chilling conditions. Can they turn on a more rapid chill at the beginning to account for that and then slow it down towards the end? Or is it a stepwise chill that they need? So they slowly increase the chilling rate over time. So it's kind of a combination of trying out those different things to go and see if they're able to optimize that to minimize the drip or ham issues that can be seen in those carcasses.
And I suppose on the other side of things, one of the other problems that we've seen in a couple of places is where we have scald tanks. So just to explain to people that once animals have basically been slaughtered, typically they're scalded to help the removal of hair and things from the carcasses. But we're seeing a number of places that are struggling with that now. Now, it's not usually on the guys that are using the steaming systems, but guys where they're using these sort of very hot water baths. Now, I've put that down to the fact that as carcasses get bigger, maintaining the temperature in those water baths is not quite as easy. Is something going on there, Matt? And, you know, sort of how is that one going to get fixed?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point and great note on that. It's just the fact that we're having so much more poundage going through those carcasses. So if you think about on the scalding side, it's going to be the live weight of that animal, basically. Because this will be shortly after sticking, stunning and sticking. And so you're going to have the guts, intestines, all of those different things maintained within that carcass. And so you're going to have a much heavier weight that you've got to get heated up, basically, to open up that hair and release that hair follicle. So with a heavier weight, you're going to obviously see a major issue if you're not able to warm up more pounds of that carcass or that exterior of the carcass. So I think that's a major reason why we're seeing that that kind of issue pop up in multiple locations across the world.
Because I'm aware of issues on probably three different continents now. So this isn't something that's just tied to a problem in, you know, specifically in Europe or just in South America. It's popping up all over. Definitely.
Seen it in multiple different locations, Brazil. I can't remember the other places that we've seen it. South Africa, I think, and others. So it's really and this is during different seasons, even, you know, some's during summer, some during winter, for these different locations. So it's definitely, I think, has where we're seeing some of these issues of these larger carcasses continue to progress and have to, in my mind, continue to optimize some of those plant conditions so that we can actually be able to continue our normal process without these issues.
And then do we get to a point where there's some practical issues? Does the pig ever get too big for it to work through a plant? I have seen the situation where sometimes the pigs get too long and basically you have a problem in terms of clearing, you know, various parts of equipment and things because basically the animals are getting in the way. Are we getting to that point at the moment in some places?
I would say we are getting very close to that. You especially think about within the chilling space of how many we can maintain in there. I think with some of that, we are getting to the point, and as we're continuing to see more issues on the live animal side that are during the harvest, the slaughter process that do affect processing side, I think we are getting seeing those issues with the ham and drip loss. I'm wondering if we're getting towards that upper range where they're going to start to have some pushback on those larger weights.
So are you seeing this as is the producer presenting a problem, or is it basically that the packer's not, you know, evolving, you know, as fast as the genetics? Come on, Matt, where are you going to put the blame for this one?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's just a function of these with growing so rapidly. I think it's the fact that we're need to be able to take some time to adjust the settings. I think that's one thing that needs to continue as the genetics continue to progress faster and faster for those gains, and thus we're not killing the animals any quicker. We're just continuing to kill at those heavier weights. I think either need to have a little bit of pushback from the packer side some on that, or need to optimize those conditions in the plant to meet the conditions with those larger carcasses.
But if you think about it, you know, that extra half a kilo, if you're putting 200 carcasses in a chiller, you know, that's an extra, you know, sort of 100 kilos that you're dropping in there. You know, that's like the equivalent of an extra carcass every time. Now, okay, you can turn around and say, well, I can cope with that this year and next year, but, you know, presumably you get to a point where you turn around and then say, okay, I need to put in less carcasses. But then the question is, where do you put the rest of them if you've not invested in extra chilling space, yeah?
Yep. If you don't have that extra space, that's going to definitely cause some issues. And then you may have to either drop back and head killed per day or anything like that. Because if that space issue has always been a challenge, I'd say, in the U.S., especially when we've had a high supply of pigs, such as a couple months ago here in the States. So
I know one of the things that our colleague Caroline had been highlighting was very much about how you load those chillers and whether or not you could do it so that the large primals aren't all right next to each other. And so certainly if you've got a carcass that's been split down the middle, it is possible to rotate one of those so that basically you don't get all the big muscles next to each other. Does that solve the problem, or are you just moving deck chairs on the Titanic?
I think that does help with some of the issues, being able to rotate those carcasses back and forth so that you don't have the massive large quantities of meat right next to each other. Because, for example, that ham having so much weight within one area, I think you are able to chill slightly better under those conditions, pending you have very good circulation within the chillers there.
If we sort of roll forward, obviously we've talked about the slaughter process and some of the challenges there, but obviously when we go to butchery and we're looking at putting these things into retail packs, are we in danger of now getting to a problem that actually, if we get the carcasses too big, then ultimately the retail pack isn't quite right because we've either got the wrong size portion in there or it just doesn't fit the pack?
Yeah, I think we've seen this somewhat in the beef industry, where these carcasses have got so large and the primals have gotten so large, and in some of those cuts that honestly is maybe not a turnoff for some of the consumers, but we may be getting towards that where some of those muscles are so big that serving a 6 ounce portion of that cut may not be as easy for the consumers, because it's such a either narrow chunk, because you're cutting a loin chop off or something like that, where we are getting to the point, I think, or at least closer, of seeing some of those issues, not only on the package side or fabrication where those are too large, but also the ultimate customer at the end of the day seeing some of those extremely large cuts is potentially deterring some of the demand for that or portioning for that.
I've certainly heard feedback from chefs that have said that if the eye muscle gets larger and larger and you start to have to cut it thinner and thinner to maintain portion size, that actually it becomes more and more difficult to cook. Now, if a chef's telling me that, I'm guessing that people at home are finding it even more challenging, yeah?
Yes, most definitely. I mean, you being able to hit that degree of doneness that you want to gets more and more difficult as you get thinner and thinner.
And what's the risk there then? Just dry overcooked pork, is it?
Dry overcooked pork. Back in the day, told to cook it to well done, and now we've kind of backed off on that, especially I think in the U.S. here, we've really pushed that way. But getting back to that dry overcooked pork definitely will not help with demand for some of those delicious pork products.
And certainly, if anyone's listening, we're a big fan of actually using meat thermometers and actually cooking meat through to a relatively light, I don't know what the level is that you're using, but somewhere around about the sort of, I think 64 degrees Celsius. I'm sure you'll give me a Fahrenheit measure in a minute, but you certainly, the old recommendations of 72 plus was, that does lead to a, sort of an overcooked product, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Definitely here in the U.S. had the same thing. Did comparisons of safety, did comparisons of quality of the product, and cooking to 145 is definitely the way to go for a good, juicy pork chop.
But the challenge with the, if we end up cutting these steaks thinner and thinner, then it becomes really difficult to actually get that point, because presumably internal temperature is moving very quick when you're cooking a very thin steak, yeah?
Yep, most definitely, especially when you're on a grill or any type of direct heat like that. It's going to be very difficult to control unless you have a consistently reading thermometer inside of that cut.
So, Matt, we've got to try and sort of sum some of this up and, look at where we're going. So we've said that we've been moving at half a kilo a year. Do you think that's going to continue in terms of increasing carcass weights? I can't see it stopping. And if you look at the trends, if anything, it might actually increase even quicker, yeah?
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's going to continue to increase until we get pushback from one side or the other, whether it be finished product, retail side, or food service, or if it's pushback from the packer side for that.
But I'm not picking up any pushback from packers at the moment, which means that packers are now going to have to adopt their system. So the two areas that we talked about, scalding and chilling, and just any key tips in terms of what we've talked about there, what should we be looking for?
Yeah, with the scald tank side, I would definitely optimize that as much as you can to make sure you're getting a consistent pull off of the and removal of that hair. The other thing to look out for is some of those, depending on the type of scald tank, is if you have those drag lines, definitely make sure to check some of those cold spots and make sure you have good circulation of the water to not prevent the loss of heating up of that outside of the carcass. Then from the chilling side, I've talked to a few packers here that have spent some time to kind of optimize that chilling to have a point where they feel very good about the ham coming out of the chiller or that blast or snap chill system. So that very rapid chilling system. And so I would definitely recommend optimizing that within your own plant, depending on size and number of head per cooler bay. For sure, making sure that you're accounting for the increased poundage with the number of head that you're actually putting in there and making sure that circulation is very good. Because even as our colleague Caroline has seen with some, being able to turn and rotate those carcasses in different ways allows for optimization of the chilling system there.
So, and that's the packer. And then I suppose the final one with the retailer, we just need to be careful that we're not ruining the product at the end of the day, yeah?
Yeah, definitely making sure we're not ruining the product with some of those quality defects or even with such large cuts, being able to cook those properly for a great consumer eating experience for that repeat purchase of our pork products.
And I suppose from our point of view, if people ever have any questions or any other queries on this or, sort of related matters, as a meat group, we're always happy to investigate those. We're happy to come and visit you. And we're happy to see if we can share any of our knowledge or any of our experience elsewhere in the world, because often in those cases, there's very few new problems. It's just a question of basically finding out who else has had it and how they actually solved it. So I know you're happy to travel as well, Matt, and myself and Caroline, we clock up enough air miles doing these sorts of things. So hopefully people will get in touch. But I hope you found this interesting. It's been great to chat to you, Matt. Thank you for listening to this Topics Norsemen podcast.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information on this topic, please contact your local Topics Norsemen representative. Subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform. Until next time.